This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Sammy P of Fox Sports, Bet Sweats will join us. We will get his thoughts on the NBA playoffs, some NFL draft stuff, and that is where we will begin. It is that time of year, a week away quietly from the NFL draft. Feels like it has creeped up a little bit. I think part of it, just a few days earlier than it's been in the past couple of years. Usually it's the end of the month, and we're talking the 24th. Not like it's much later than usual. Usually 28th, 29th, so 4 or 5 days earlier. I've talked about this in the past couple of weeks where just not as much juice, not as many quarterbacks, not a lot of receivers. There's a couple running backs, but the public, the people that, the casual fan, not even the casual fan, the casual draft fan, the most people that like football and like the draft, you like guys that you like guys that touch the ball. That's who you know the quarterbacks, you know the receivers. All right, you know some of the running backs and, offensive linemen, defensive line, linebackers, defensive players in general. It's just not going to derive the enthusiasm like it would last year when there's six quarterbacks that go in the first round. You got two first rounders this year and they were both FCS guys, Ward from Incarnate Word and eventually Miami, eventually Washington State after that. And Deion's kid, Shador, who went to Jackson State, then, of course, Colorado. So these are not like blue chip top elite prospects just based on grade. These are kids that are going to get picked in the first round. Ward looks like he's going to go first overall. Sanders, who knows when he's going to get picked here. It's more based on just the fact that teams need quarterbacks and they talk themselves into these players based on, hey, if we don't have a quarterback, we need one. So even if it's a slight reach, there's a saying, there's no such thing as a second round quarterback. Because if he's good enough to go in the second round, well, he probably gets bumped up to the first because of the need of the position, the value of the position. So right now, Ward is a massive, massive favorite to go one to the Titans, to go one overall. But the assumption is the Titans stay and make that pick, stick and pick, as it says, as the new expression. So the Titans taking Ward one, he's minus 5,000, 50,000, whatever. There's a bunch of zeros after all these numbers. If you think for whatever reason he's not going number one, you can get a fat number on whoever you like. Hunter likely going second based on the odds, right around minus 330. Carter minus 250 to go third. And then it starts to get interesting. Campbell minus 160 to go fourth. And then Mason Graham likely to go fifth. That would be to the Jags. So that's your likely top five. Then it gets to the Raiders. Genty's odds on to go sixth. And here's where I've added a pick. I took a shot on the Raiders to draft a defensive lineman 10-1 with their first pick, just because I don't buy this idea in a league, in a draft where there's so many running backs, and this is a loaded running back draft class, and a team that needs so much. Are they really going to sit here and spend the sixth pick in the draft on Ashton Genty? I understand running backs have had a little bit of a rejuvenation here. Barkley having a great year. Jahmyr Gibbs, who everyone criticized that pick, he's turned out to be a tremendous player. So the running back has had a little bit of a comeback here. That being said, the coach for the Raiders is Carroll, who's an older guy, and he's old school, so maybe he wants the pick, but the GM is a young, analytically driven guy, and the analytically driven guys are not going to point themselves to a running back when you have so many needs. So I just took a shot that they would draft a defensive player with their first pick. Again, you get it 10-1, you get linebacker plus 650. You can shop around here if you think they're going to take an offensive lineman 7-1. I'm just basically fading the idea that Genty is going to be a Raider. The other one I added, I'm not sure what the Jets are going to do, but I think tight end is very much in play at 3-1, just because I don't think they're going to take a quarterback. All of the good offense and defensive linemen will be gone there. Tyler Warren, maybe even Loveland. That's just one where you take what you think is the best available player, and Warren is a guy who's just off the charts. And you look at what Bowers did last year for the Raiders at tight end, record-setting season, a million catches, just instant impact. I could see Warren being the pick. So the Jets to pick a tight end plus 330 at their first pick is another one I added. Again, just flyers. There's not as much available as in past years. There's more eyeballs on this stuff, which means the markets are sharper. It's like an Easter egg hunt where all the Easter eggs get gobbled up quickly. And it's not, there's a lot of shows talking about betting. There's just a lot of markets on this stuff that are more discussed than they were. I remember, during COVID 2019, 2018, it was a little more, I'd say underground, where not that many people betting it. Good lines were there, good numbers were there, and they would last. Now it's just this stuff gets scooped up. These books are very, very cautious to post stuff because they get beat on information. You just basically have to be watching Twitter, watching the news cycle 24/7. And this is one where a rare situation where the public can have more information than them. The bettors can have more information than them. I mean, think about last year, some of these books posted 100 to 1, 150 to 1 on Penix to be the Falcons pick or Penix to go seventh. It's just stuff like that. Not that anybody knew that was going to happen, but they're getting beat on this information. It's not worth it to book it. It's not worth it to pay people to post the lines. And they just, this is how the books operate. They take their ball and they go home saying, you know what? It's not worth it for us. We don't want to get beat on this stuff. We don't want to have to pay people to monitor this stuff to make the line. So I really believe if you book this stuff and you made the limits not huge but reasonable, $200, $300 is going to satisfy most people. And you just moved it based on bets, you could probably book it and make money off it, but they have no appetite for it. So that's the way it is. Just quickly before we get to Sammy P, I would say the Kings Mavs game is it to me. I would expect the Kings to win this game. Kings laying around 5 here, some 4.5s depending on where you shop. And I would expect with home court, remember last year they were in this same scenario, the 9-10 game, and they blew Golden State off the floor. Dallas, does Dallas really want to continue this nightmare of a season, or do they just want to pack their stuff, go home, lick their wounds, and basically just hide for the rest of the summer after what a disaster they've been? The GM keeps doubling, tripling down. Say, oh, it was a great trade. I would do this trade again. No regrets. I mean, that the Nico Harrison and whoever runs that franchise just completely lost. So I wouldn't imagine. Now, does that trickle down to the players? And do the players feel that? Maybe. I mean, they're getting booted home and people chanting Luka. I would expect the Mavs to maybe have a half-hearted effort here. So I would look towards the Kings. And I also like the Heat. Another rematch of a play-in game last year, or a rematch of a play-in game last year. Kings were in the 9-10, but it wasn't against the Mavs. It was against the Warriors, like I said. The Heat against the Bulls, this was for a chance to get the 8 seed last year. The Heat lost their first play-in game to Philly. The Bulls won their first play-in game. Then these teams met in the third game, and the Heat won. I think people are just giving the benefit of the doubt because it's Miami, because it's Spoelstra. They think, oh, playoff Heat. This is not Butler. This is okay. They have got out of bio, but this is not the same team that's made runs, a couple years ago in the bubble, a few years prior than that, that just exceeds expectations quite. So I would look to lay the point or take the Bulls on the money line here. So both home teams are going to be the play here for the playing games. Then I added Raiders to pick a defensive lineman 10 to 1, and the Jets to pick a tight end plus 330. And we will get to the NBA and some NFL draft with Sammy. First of all, last thing on this before we get to Sammy, meant to mention this on Sunday. What a lame, lame move that was by Bridges on Sunday to keep this games started streak alive, games played streak alive, where he starts the game, he commits a foul in 6 seconds and checks out and says, oh, I played my game, my streak continues, my streak lives on. How corny was that? I mean, the whole point of the streak is, you want to be like a mini Cal Ripken, and you play every game and you take pride in playing every game. If you take pride in playing every game, then play in the game. To check out after 6 seconds after committing a foul, just a cheap, contrived way to keep that streak alive. I hated how he did that. I like Bridges. I think he's a good player. I've always liked him as a player. I thought that was just extremely corny, extremely lame. I don't know what the point of that was. Who cares that you played in so many games? Obviously he does, but to cheapen it like that, if you care about the streak so much, play in the game. If you don't care about the streak, sit out the game. To commit a foul with 6 seconds to check out, I thought was completely just ridiculous. And I saw one book hung a line for over under points. If you were smart enough to find a book that had points, rebounds, assists, and parlay that stuff, it's a hell of a way to win a bet. It's probably a way to get your account banned and limited, but they got to pay because he played, he committed a foul. There's no avoiding that. That's a winner. So if you had that information, good for you. But I kind of wish I had that information. That was a good angle if you kind of sniff that one out. But incredibly, incredibly lame by Bridges. But coming up, NFL draft, NBA playoffs with Sammy P. That is next. This should have been more podcast. All right, you can catch him Fox Sports, the Bear Bets podcast, the Bet Sweats podcast. He's all over the place and he joins us now. It is the great Sammy P. Sammy, what's going on, man? The NBA playoffs are here. Draft is about a week away. What's going on? How are you?
I'm still trying to compute how I lost over top five bets on Sunday. I don't know how that happened. He comes in at 18, tied for third. He was tied for first at 13 or 14, and then the triple bogey on the final. Oh, man. I don't even want to tell you what that did to me Sunday night with the Dodgers and with the Ducks. Just a crucial, crucial miscalculation by me thinking that Ludvig Åberg would not triple bogey on 18 on Sunday. Oh,
yeah, him and DeChambeau both with some really tough beats to finish outside the top five. Let's get into. Let's start with NBA playoffs. Do you have anything on the two Wednesday playing games here? Heat, Bulls. Bulls laying a point or so, and then the Mavericks and the Kings. Kings laying about five.
I always laugh when the Bulls are favored. That said, Miami has lost a lot of its luster over the last year or so. Obviously, Jimmy Butler's gone. I look at both games and think, wow, these books were off on the totals because they both moved 6 points down. Now, we've started to finally see some buyback, and depending on when the show comes out, you know, the Miami-Chicago total opened 224.5, and that felt high. Well, it got down to 218 Monday morning, and we were talking about it on Bet Sweats. This is probably the floor. So this would be the time to bet over. And you could still find a 218.5, plenty of 219 out there. I think we're going to build back up because the Bulls play no defense, and they fly up and down the court. That's conducive to, you know, a lot of overs, I would think. So I'm going to bet on the other side of that move. I wasn't going to bet over 224.5, but at 218.5, that's an over for me. And I have no idea what to do in Dallas and Sacramento. No idea. That total's come down 7.5 points, by the way, on Wednesday night, which I don't know what these guys were thinking. Maybe they just forgot these were play-in games. Yeah. Maybe.
These play-ins have had a habit of going under. It's almost like the Missouri Valley unders or, well, nothing's as good as the Missouri Valley unders, but the Missouri Valley unders, the early start time unders in the NCAA tournament, these play-ins, it's just, I think they applied the regular season data to these games, but they're not regular season games. These are single elimination games. Pace tends to slow down generally, a little more intensity on defense, and the pros bet the unders, which I think we're seeing.
Yeah, I didn't see those moves that drastically on Tuesday, though. Those moved a couple points. These Wednesday ones just sailed under, but wise guys are not betting under when they move 7 points. I think that's this, you know, misconception that, oh, well, the sharps are all on the under. Yeah, they were at higher numbers, but not anymore. Not anymore.
What's your favorite bet in terms of the series prices?
I think people will be upset about this because they believe in conspiracy and they believe that LeBron and Luka are going to make a deep run. I think the T-Wolves at plus 160, 165 is a solid bet. I'm an Ant guy, though, so I'm a little bit biased there. I don't know how you feel about the Lakers, but, you know, those desperate moves usually, not to get lazy, but those moves usually don't work inside of a season. When guys make these big trades in the front office and they pull this huge maneuver off, I think it's more a gamble than anything, which I respect. But I don't think the Lakers play enough defense. Not that the Timberwolves are this all-world D anymore. I mean, they have lost some pieces. I don't know how much they're going to play Gobert, especially if the Lakers go small. But I don't know, Will, who stops Ant. I have no idea who's going to stop Anthony Edwards. And I think he and the supporting cast in Minnesota are enough, but the price is really what's interesting. Lakers minus 200, that's too high in my world.
Yeah, and the Lakers got bet up too. I think they opened minus 160 and they got bet up. I'm with you. I think it's a toss-up series. I would, you know, life on the line, I'd pick the Lakers just because they do have the seventh game at home and they have LeBron and Luka who can kind of pick you apart. And LeBron is super smart in terms of, you know, he's seen every defense. He knows once the series goes on, he knows what you're going to do and he can use it against you. But to me, I know it's juiced at minus 175. Over 5.5 games is something I would look at too. I don't think this is a sweep. I don't think anyone wins at five. I think this is a long 6, probably 7-game series.
I had a buddy who bets the NBA really well say that he's betting every series to go 6 or more, which I thought was interesting. I didn't tail, but I'm always listening and always trying to understand how people that bet the NBA more regularly than I do, how they perceive things. I will say that game is what, Saturday night?
Yes.
I'm going to have a big bet on T-Wolves plus 5 for sure. I covered LeBron a lot, especially when he'd roll through Chicago, whether he was with Miami or Cleveland. He's maybe the most gettable superstar all time in game one. He just doesn't really give a shit because he's in that chess mode where he's trying to feel you out. He also, I asked him this one time after one of the games. I said, is there any truth to the notion that you like to let other teams gain a little confidence early because you like to rip their heart out late? And he just smiled ear to ear and said, "I don't know what you're talking about, man." And if you go back and look at some of those Cleveland Chicago series over the years, D Rose and the Bulls would win game one a lot and then just run out of gas at the end. So that's sort of my system play against LeBron in game one. They don't have the urgency that they need to win a series. And obviously, you don't have that in game one. But T Wolves plus five night one, they could obviously win. I'm going to take the five and I'm going to make a decent bet on that.
I like that. I like that angle. I didn't know you interviewed LeBron. You never told me that. Does everyone else know about that? When was this? Who were you working for?
I was at WGN, man. I was covering all the Chicago teams. So I had the Bears, the Bulls, the Blackhawks, the Cubs, and Sox. And I was around that D Rose team where Derek blew his ACL out. Game one, they're up 15 in 2012. They're the one seed. And Tibbs has them out there still. And they never really
Lost the
quite got
series, right?
back.
Lost the 1-8
They did.
to
Yeah.
Philly.
It was bad. It was
Yeah.
bad. Yeah. The Bulls were the one, Sixers were the eight. And then D Rose, they tried to rush him back. They tried to clear him. He wasn't mentally ready. And then I think the best series I ever covered was 2015. That was D Rose relatively back. D Rose, Noah, Mike Dunleavy, Pau Gasol, Deng was gone. The bench mob was mostly gone, but they're against LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin Love and the Cavs. And that was, I believe, Bulls win game one, Cavs win game two. D Rose banks in the three to win the third game, and then LeBron hits the jumper over Jimmy in game four. Cavs win that series and then go to the finals.
Yeah, I think that game four was on Mother's Day, and that was a really good game. That was a game where there was a lot of I remember that game really well. There were a lot of scoring droughts, and the Bulls had their chances to win that game and maybe take control of the series. They just couldn't, make enough shots when they need to. What else did you get close on, or did you bet in terms of these series? What else is on your radar here?
So I didn't make the bet, but I certainly paid attention to it. The huge move on the Clippers, who I see right now, DraftKings has the Clips plus 110. On the favorite side, the Nuggets minus 135. I saw the first line, Denver minus 190. And I hate to jump in on the dog when I've missed 40, 50 cents. I don't know what we get from Denver. And I think what that market is telling us, Will, is that I think maybe the books overestimated and we're a little bit more confident in what Jamal Murray is going to give the Nuggets. Clearly, professionals don't think he's healthy and they don't think that he's anywhere near 100%. I thought it was a pretty expensive opener at minus 190. Now, here I am sitting here wondering the way I wonder, should I lay 135 now on the Nuggets just in case maybe the market's wrong? Because betting these 60-cent moves and chasing the steam is not ideal. We had a guest this morning on who came on and said he's going to bet the Pistons to lose game one and win the series at 8-1. And I haven't heard anybody else say that yet. That was Noops Christensen, who said Pistons lose game one, win the series. That blew my mind.
I gave out Pistons in six at 9-1 because I do think they're live at plus 330. And if they're gonna win, let's just play it out here. They're not gonna sweep. And they're probably not gonna win in five. It would be hard to win a game seven in Madison Square Garden. The formula is you steal one early, ideally game one. Who knows? You split the first two, and then you just hold serve and you close out in game six. So I thought the 9-1 is interesting on Detroit, and if you like them plus the 330, I think maybe you just, half of your bet on the 9-1 because that's likely the closeout. I mean, look, they could always win a game seven. It could always, Brunson can get hurt. Somebody on Thibodeau's team could always get hurt, as we just talked about, with the way he wears guys out. But I think Dem in six is interesting. Do you mess with these correct series scores at all? Because you can get some monster payouts on these.
I don't usually because I would hate myself if they actually won in five or seven. I mean, I think you have the right idea. I may jump in on that Pistons lose game one, win the series. I think that's very interesting, but then they can win it in five, six, or seven. So it just opens up the cupboard for more possibilities. I'm looking right now at the minutes leaders in the NBA. This is regular season. Josh Hart, second in the league. Bridges, fourth in the league. Anunoby, sixth in the league. So three of the top six guys in terms of minutes per game all play for Tibbs, which, as you alluded to, is not really a surprise.
No, and they got hurt last year in the playoffs, and you could tell, bad luck. Anyone can get hurt. There's some truth to that, but when you play all these minutes and part of me respects it that they don't do the load management thing, but you're more prone to injury, I think, once you come to April and May after you've played a long season here. Any other NBA thoughts before we move off to some other stuff?
I just look at the path for Golden State, and again, we're going to tape this before the game gets played, and that's okay. But if you look at the way things could go for Golden State, I've got the bracket right now. So if they get the eight, if they were to lose Tuesday, again, we'll know the result by the time this comes out. But let's say they lose the game Tuesday night and then have to get the eight seed, then they got to go through Oklahoma City. And if they get through that, they play the winner of what, Nuggets and Clippers, which is a nightmare right now. If they secure the seven, though, it's a lot easier. You get the Rockets, and then you get what, the loser of
Yeah, winner Lakers
Lakers and
T-Wolves. Yeah.
T-Wolves. I think the former is much tougher than the latter,
100%.
and there's got to be this notion that they want nothing to do with Oklahoma City in round one. So it's funny, we had a couple guys that we bet with say, how much can we lay on Warriors Tuesday night at -260? And I said, well, I don't know, let me find out. And we talked to a lot of the same guys. And he goes, can you bet three dimes on it? And I said, no, they will not give me three dimes on the Warriors Tuesday night at -260. An hour later, he calls me and says, it's -300 now. So the market sort of moved on Golden State. It's not a do or die game, but it's fascinating. And then you get all these emails from the books. Like I get emails from BetMGM, DraftKings, FanDuel, and it's the most bet money lines. And it's mostly dogs. This dog on the money line, this dog on the money line, this dog on the money line. The public never wants to lay 260, 280. Wise guys have no issue. If they make a game 4, 450, they will lay 280, 290, 300. So just to kind of peek behind the curtain at how professionals are viewing that game, Golden State on Tuesday night. They were in no worry to lay that big money line favorite price, -260, -280, all the way up to $3.
Who do you have in the finals, and who do you have winning?
It's going to be a cop out. I think it's going to be Boston, Oklahoma City. But for my financials, I would love the Warriors to make a run. Bet some of that right when they got Jimmy, just thinking that the number was going to go down. I didn't think they were going to go 18-2 or 19-2, whatever they did. It's 7-1, 750. Maybe a smaller bet at this point in time because you've missed, the huge move. That was a bet that was 2 months ago. It was right around Valentine's Day. I still think that Jimmy and Draymond are going to dictate the defense. And then you have the greatest shooter of all time, not to mention a coach who knows how to win. So if there's a sleeper in the West, Golden State, if you can call a 7 or 8 seed a sleeper, but I do think they can make a run if the path opens up. But I think it's going to be Boston, OKC, and that's very, very boring. So I apologize for being dull.
Well, I've talked about that one really back to football season, where that finals exact matchup was like 5-1, and I was like, 4-1, 3-1 is probably the last place I'd play. It's kind of like +175. So, people that were listening and got those 4 or 5-1s, those are good numbers to have in the account right now. We'll see. We'll see if Cleveland can put up a fight against Boston. Have you looked at this market? My buddy Mike, who's sharp, pointed this out to me, and it's down right now, but these have been up. Eastern Conference Finals MVP. He brought up Derek White, 55-1 at FanDuel, thinking, you know what? He makes a ton of threes. There's a lot of recency bias in these awards, in these markets. If they win the Eastern Conference and they win that conference finals, like they're favored to do, White at 55-1 is a hell of a number. Do you look at these at all?
I haven't. I'm curious on some of the Cleveland prices. I don't have them in front of me, but I'm curious on, those second and third guys for Cleveland. Obviously Donovan Mitchell will have the best price, but if you go to that second team on the odds board and look at their second and third options, oftentimes you can find, guys like that in the 40, 50, 60-1 range. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but if you were having me, bet a couple things there, I would look at some of the Cavs guys, maybe even Mitchell. Do you have the numbers up or no?
They're down now for whatever reason. They've been up
Oh,
a
okay.
lot though, so maybe they'll be up in the
I
morning.
mean,
But
he's got to be, Mitchell's got to be what, 25, 30-1 would be my guess. Even that, as I say that seems a little high. Maybe he's in that 15-1 range. But if you go to the second and third banana in Cleveland, you definitely get, 40-1, 50-1. I haven't bet that stuff yet. A lot of these markets are still kind of coming out over the next couple of days. I did. Let me ask a question on your show. Did you hear about this story with the guy who passed away, the DraftKings customer.
Yes, but you can explain
Dude.
it.
Dude. So he kicks the bucket and the spouse finds out that he's got $100,000 in wagers on the Celtics. And we don't know exactly what the bets are, but the report from Ryan Butler at Butler Bets says that it's $100,000 in separate futures on the Celtics to win the East and win the finals. And the bets were placed on the East market at +350. It's now -130. And the finals bets were made at +450. And now you're lucky to find a 2-to-1. So here's how that phone call went, right? Hey, what do they have? They got Celtics 350, East 450 final. Yeah, give it back.
Course.
They can have it. I don't mean to make light of the situation, but if those were $100,000 futures on the Minnesota Timberwolves or the Indiana Pacers, do you think DraftKings would have made them whole?
Absolutely not.
No.
Absolutely not. I want to know so much about that too. Like, how did she get the account and password? How did she find out about those bets? Maybe it was a last second thing where he told her, I have these bets. That is fascinating. And you do think about that all the time. Like, look, people. Things happen and that money just stays in the account, especially you're tying up futures bets, awards bets for a long time from now. Just the math of it is, you know what? Not everyone's going to be, we're not going to live forever. So it's, boy, that is a strange one. That is fascinating.
It's a
Those are
sad
great numbers,
story.
by the way. How was that +350? That was before the season?
I don't know when they were placed. There's a lot of details that haven't come out and a lot of questions that I have about it, but that's a very simple calculation behind the counter because I'm just going to assume that
Sure.
it's 50K, 50K. So 50 at 350, 50 at 450. So if that math is right, the exposure for the house is about 400 large. So looking at the odds now, I mean, they're -130 to go to the finals. That's an easy. Do we give them the 100 or do we risk losing 400? Again, if it's a different team, I don't know that you get this result.
100%. NFL draft. What do you know? What do you think you know? We've been talking back and forth, texting back and forth. It's not as easy to bet, but what are you pretty confident of a week or so away, if anything?
I think Colson Loveland's going to go in the top 15. I'm checking the current market right now. The problem with this stuff is that there are not many places you can play it, and a lot of books have gone away from the over/under on draft position. I remember one year Circa put up 50 guys, and they probably put up 10 the next year because they were throwing up third rounders and putting up 92 and a half, and they were coming down 20 slots and. They got destroyed. And if you ask any of the guys that were there at the time, they would admit it. But let's talk about Loveland here. We bet him under 19 and a half at -150. And as you know, I don't need to tell you, these markets get blasted because information comes out. So Colson Loveland right now under 19 and a half is -225. And that's probably a bet by later this week is going to be 18 and a half. So it's really a question of what are you willing to risk? A lot of guys will say, well, I can't lay 2.25. Okay. Humans and I, not to get too long-winded on the story here, but 2018 draft, there was a market at one of the Vegas books. How many offensive linemen will go in the top 10? And that was the year Quentin Nelson was a lock and the other guy was McGlinchey. So over 1.5 top 10 was -180. And we were talking about it on VSiN. And we missed the move. It went to 225, 230. And Matt says, we're going to bet it. Let's bet it. So we lay the 230 and we're here and all, oh, how are you going to lay 230? 2 days later, it was -800. 3 days later, it was off the board. So in drafts, generally speaking, -180, $2, 220, 250. While it may seem steep on the surface, if you get the right information, that is gold. And I, we're reading tea leaves now and hearing things that Loveland might be the first tight end taken. I'm not there. I'm not betting that. But 19 and a half feels very high. He could go to the Colts at 14. But Will, I think if you go under right now, 19 and a half, I think when Circa puts their numbers up Thursday, you're going to see him lower than 19 and a half, and that will move the whole market. The other guy we have is Mason Graham, under 5.5. He probably goes to Jacksonville. That's a little juicy, less juicy than Loveland, but -135. on under 5.5. That's it though, man. It's just hard to get down. Nobody's putting markets up, and the limits are so bad because the books usually lose on this stuff.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, it used to be there were fewer eyeballs on this in terms of bettors. So the good stuff would not get gobbled up. Now there's just so many people talking about betting. There's so many betting shows. There's just people betting this stuff. Like there's just, it's an Easter egg hunt, and all the eggs just get gobbled up.
Yeah, it's a good analogy. And I'm looking right now at DraftKings. They have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 guys. 5 years ago, you'd see 30 guys or 40 guys. But at the end of the day, the books would look at the bottom line and see, oh, red, 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 red. And then, you know, information comes out the week of the draft, you know, next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And, you know, you could see positions move 4 or 5 slots. Who was the linebacker? I'm sure you were part of this too many years ago. Quay Walker. There he is. I remember they opened him like 40.5. Everybody bet under. That was an old Eric Eager tip that got spread around. I'm sure you saw it. It got down to 33.5. It moved 7 slots. And then the Packers take him at 22.
Yeah.
Those days, I fear, are long gone. Even these numbers right here, 9.5, 8.5, 19.5, 17.5, 5.5, 13.5, 17.5. I mean, you're never going to see 40.5, 55.5, 72.5, maybe ever again, because there's no way to book that, because there's no defense. You can't play defense against the information in the draft.
Plus you have to be watching, not that I'm sympathetic to these books whatsoever, but you have to be watching all the time. It's just impossible to keep up. The bettors are always going to have the information over you. So I remember, you know, I was having dinner or something the Tuesday night before the draft last year, and a lot of the move on Daniels too, it became pretty much a certainty where, you know, it was -160, then it was -500 before you could blink, just because of, you know, some workout, some report, and a couple books that are late to it. If you're late to it, you're going to get killed, and it's hard to keep up with you know, with the information.
Yeah, the one market that keeps staring me in the face though, I'm looking at MGM right now, and their price on Cam Ward is absurd, man. And I'm not saying that he's not going one, but I remember when this market opened up, he was -200. And now MGM has -10,000. They are dealing Abdul Carter at 35-1. And I'm like, don't do it. I'm like trying to talk myself out of betting more. Dude, I bet him at 2-1. 2-1. And obviously got a horrendous number. That may be one of the worst bets I've ever made in terms of CLV. Betting 2-1 when now there's 35-1. But I see these mocks and these, you know, these big boards. And Dane Brugler, who I really respect, has Cam Ward as the 13th overall prospect. And I can't wrap my head around him being the 13th prospect, but being -10,000 to go first. That's crazy.
We'll see how it goes, man. Appreciate the time, Sammy. Let everyone know where they can find you.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at SP Shoot, and then Bet Sweats Monday to Friday, 9 to noon Eastern on the BetMGM network. And also on Bear Bets.
And chicken dinner, too. What about chicken dinner?
Yeah, whatever. Chicken dinner's fine.
All right, man. Appreciate the time. We'll do it again soon.
See ya.
All right, that'll do it. Rate, review, subscribe. Thanks to Sammy P. We'll be back Friday. See you then.